on the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Now, Olivia and I, we've been talking about destinations because I have you guys know we are kind of looking at the map, trying to figure out where we want to go and what we want to do. Spring break, I don't necessarily take a spring break per se, Olivia, but I do like to start planning just where I want to go throughout the year.
Right. I know you need some kind of break, but I don't know if you can even call travel a break anymore.
Well, I mean, hey, I try and get a little bit of rest and relaxation in there, but travel is the job.
At least you love doing it.
I love doing it. I love going places. And when you talk about, you know, going to places that you really love, what usually makes you love that place is there's some connection that you get with it. And last year, I had the opportunity to go to Greenwood, South Carolina, and visit the Benjamin Mays Historic Site. And I'll tell you, I mean, this all goes even back to like my father. My father knew Benjamin E. Mays, and he used to talk about him a lot. I went to Spelman, you know, Benjamin E. Mays was very involved, you know, with more, I mean, it's just a connection there with the AU Center. And hey, I'll tell you, it was just a fascinating place to go because there's so much history there and so many things to do. But I met someone named Chris Thomas, who is a director there. So he and I decided we were kind of cousins. So I have Chris on the phone today. I have my cousin on the phone. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great.
So it's good to have you on since we have decided that we're cousins with that same last name.
We are cousins.
Well, I know that there's a lot of things that are going on, especially leading up to the 50th anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And Martin Luther King Jr. And I know you guys are connected. So can you tell us how you are playing a part in this anniversary of the 50th anniversary of his death?
Well, we're doing a number of things here. We're going to have a small Dr. King exhibit here on site. Much of it's going to tie into King's relationship with Mays. Of course, you know, Dr. Mays was one of the great mentors of Dr. King. In fact, you know, Dr. King's wife said that the decision that finally led Martin to the path, which she was talking about the ministry, was largely due to the example of Dr. Benjamin E. Mays, then president of Morehouse College. And she said that from the first to the last, Dr. Mays took a great interest in Martin. And you know, Dr. Mays was instrumental in Martin becoming who he was. In fact, Dr. King came to Morehouse during Dr. Mays' first class in 1944 of early admission students, and he came at just 15 years of age. And Dr. Mays left a lasting impact upon King, and of course, he was the eulogist of Dr. King as well. And so we have some stuff already here on site where we talk about the relationship of Mays and King. But our site is comprised of the birth home of Dr. Mays. We also have the Burns Springs School here, which was an identical building to the school Dr. Mays attended from age 5 until 15. And then we have our museum that looks like an old barn, but it's really a full-size museum in here. And then we have our most recent addition, which is the statue of Dr. Mays that is the first full-life statue of anyone in our county. But Dr. Mays, as I said earlier, you know, he really made his lasting legacy on American society through the young men and, of course, some Spelman women that he mentored during his 27 years as the president of Morehouse College in Atlanta. And, of course, you know, Dr. King becomes probably the most world-renowned of all those students that Mays mentored and really impacted their lives.
Now, absolutely. I mean, he definitely had a huge impact on not only Dr. King, but as you mentioned, so many young men who came through Morehouse. Now, I want to go back a little bit, though, because you mentioned that the site, the historic site there, includes his home. Now, is this the home where he was born or that he grew up in? Tell us a little bit about the home, because I visited it, and I can tell you that it is really definitely a way to really gain an insight to life during that time.
Yeah, it is the home that Dr. Mays was born in. He was born August 1st of 1894 to two parents that were both ex-slaves. His mother had been a slave for just 3 years, his father for 10 years prior to the end of slavery. And he was born in this house into sort of very rough conditions, and the family stayed in this house to shortly after Mays' fourth birthday, sometime between age 4 and 5. We don't know for sure, but many historians believe that the family may have wanted to move from that home after the events of the Phoenix riots, which Dr. Mays, of course, starts his autobiography in saying that the events of the Phoenix riots were the earliest memories of his life. And, of course, it was a traumatic time for Mays. It was a race riot here in Greenwood, South Carolina, where 9 African Americans over the course of a week were lynched and killed. But on day 2 of that, which was the bloodiest day of that event, men on horseback ride up to this home that sits on our site and terrorize Mays and his family at gunpoint, and his father was forced to get down and stand up 3 times and salute to Mays. Dr. Roper, in his book, said that his father, Hezekiah, played the Sambo in order to save his son's life, because that these men were bloodthirsty and wanted an African-American man's head in the noose. They didn't care if he was 4 or 40. And so Mays was 4 years old standing on the porch of the house we have here. But I think you're correct, Anita, that it really gives you an opportunity to look at the life and the world that Mays was born into.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he made such a difference during his lifetime, because he also worked with several different presidents as well, right?
He did. He was an advisor to 3 presidents. To the first of those was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and then, of course, upon Kennedy's assassination, he becomes an advisor to Lyndon Baines Johnson. And then after his career at Morehouse, he becomes the first African-American president of the Atlanta Public School Board, and he is, during that period of time, establishes a relationship with Jimmy Carter. And then, of course, when Carter leaves the governorship of Georgia and goes on to the White House, he becomes an advisor to Carter during his presidency. And so he was an advisor to 3 presidents, which is a phenomenal thing, considering that he was a young man that was born in the backwoods of South Carolina and born into poverty. And so for him to have gone the places that he went and to travel the world like he did, it's truly a phenomenal story.
Well, how supportive were his parents with this? Because I would think that what he grew up to be was quite different from what his parents experienced.
Yeah, his mother, Lavinia, was a huge supporter of Mays. In fact, she was probably possibly one of the most largest influences in his life in terms of encouraging him to go on, which is extraordinary in of itself, seeing that she was, again, a woman that was born a slave and could not read or write. But yet, she was a woman that believed very much in black pride, and she encouraged her son to sort of live his life and model his life in the example of the many great black leaders that existed in our nation at that time. But his father, Hezekiah, was not as great a supporter of Mays' desire to move on. In fact, Hezekiah didn't so much believe in Mays acquiring all that education, and he was a roadblock in many ways. And at one point, when Dr. Mays is in high school, the two of them have to break ranks over his father's desire for him to come back to Greenwood and to work on the farm, because, when he goes off to high school, Hezekiah had the expectation that he was only going to go down there and be there during the winter months, during November, December, January, and February, and come back to work on the farm. In fact, his first 2 years of high school, he does that, and he finally realizes that he couldn't keep coming back to Greenwood if he wanted to fulfill his dream of getting education. And so he tells his father that he couldn't keep coming back, and his father threatens him with the threat of sending the Greenwood sheriff after him to go down to Orangeburg and bring him back. And so Dr. Mays never comes back, and he and his father, sort of part ways over that issue for many, many years. And of course, years later, they have a mending of the ways, and his mother died in 1938, and he then goes to, his father comes to live with him in Washington, D.C., where he was at that time the dean of the School of Religion at Howard University. And his father just, tells his son that he just could have never imagined that his son would become what he had become. And this is even before his presidency at Morehouse. But his dad just simply didn't have the vision to see, where his son was trying to go. And he couldn't see much beyond the farm.
And that's understandable at that particular time as well. But
absolutely.
We're coming down, Chris, to the end of this segment, but I want to put in one little thing here, because I think there's a little unknown fact about Dr. Mays that people may not know. He was actually a songwriter.
He was. We actually have a picture of him in the museum here sitting at a piano, and our little caption says, "Could he really play?" But Mays was certainly a man that loved music, of one of the things that he was very appreciative of. And I've never been able to really get my hands around how good a pianist he really was, but he did fool around with music and did write some jingles and lyrics to some songs.
Now, give me a website so people can check out the website and then also plan to come and visit you there.
So you would go to www.gleams, that's GLEAMNSHRC.org, and then click on the little Benjamin E. Mays Historic Preservation Site button, and it will take you to the site that's sort of buried in our Gleam site, and it will give you just about any information you want to know. You'll be able to see pictures of our recent statue unveiling and some other events we've had, and so we're continuing to beef up that site and add to it. But I think if people came to the site, they would have a wonderful experience here.
Absolutely, and then come to the site itself and have a great experience there as well. So, Chris, thank you so, so very much for coming on the show with us. And we are coming down to the end of this segment, guys, so sit tight because we do have another segment coming up here on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. We'll be back in a moment.